Kona Kamara, and welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine. Good evening, BBS family. Welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. We're so happy to have you with us. I'm Shisara Kona Kamara, and I'm joined tonight by PLEN, Linda, and Tim, some of our core council members for the Shambhala Center for Spiritual Awareness. We're going to go ahead and get started. Take a nice deep breath, and we'll clear the space. Mother, Father, God that I am, through the Great Central Sun Hierarchy, through the Office of the Christ and the Order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles, not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, Keeper of the Violet Flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light, one shaft to surround each one of us, and I ask that they be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them, and I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you, to humanity, and I place myself in service to all of you tonight. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. Because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. So it struck me as I was listening to the intro at the end when I say, you know, you are beginningless, you are endless, you are divine. It reminded me of something I did today. So I kind of took a little break from making, we usually stick up these like quote posts on our Facebook page. And I had just started doing like little video quote posts. And then I took a break. Other things were going on. But today I put another one up on Facebook. And that comes into play on that one. So if you want to check it out, you can go to facebook.com/the Shambhala Center, B-H-A-L-A, and see that there. I think those get archived under videos, I think, something like that. Or you'll see it right on the front page. And what else? And I'm trying to think of little announcements to get out. To those of you who do take advantage of the donation button on the BBS, on our BBS page, as well as through the ShambhalaCenter.org, I just want to extend my my very, very deep gratitude for that. We are a nonprofit organization. This is all the work that I do, and I do not do my work for an income. I don't make money doing my work. And all of us here who run the Shambhala Center do it on a volunteer basis. But we do have costs. Our office space obviously costs money and different things that have to be covered. So your donations are a huge, huge help for us because we've been sustaining this whole machine on our own. And it's always amazing to have help from the outside. So thank you for that. And anyone who is interested, it is tax deductible. We are actually officially a church in North Carolina, so kind of an odd kind of church, I guess, but but we are bona fide. A spiritual center, how about that? Can we call it that versus a church? Yeah, okay. All right. So what should we talk about? Well, we can go into what we talked about at session, which was actually seems like a very simple thing, but ended up taking the whole hour and a half of talking. So we can talk about communication tonight. And people are like, oh, what, you know, like that shouldn't be any big deal. And it really shouldn't be a big deal. But it's an enormous deal because of where people's communication comes from. So, of course, you know me, I'm not going to talk about anything that doesn't have a purpose concerning the work that we do, and that's where we're headed. So I was walking down the hallway. Of course, I never know what I'm going to talk about when we have our sessions, and I was walking down the hallway prior to when we started tonight, and every room I went by in this building was populated with talking people, and the energy of it was very scattered and kind of chaotic, you know. And so when I came in to our office and I sat down in the stillness, I just kind of witnessed the energy around or in my head as this very tumultuous, chaotic energy, you know, which is fine. That's fine. But it made me think about communication. The human has a great propensity for verbal communication. And, you know, we think of it as this a marker of how evolved we are. Yeah. You know, no one else communicates the way we do, and no one else has the extensive vocabulary that we have and all of this stuff. But the greater question is, how is communication in general serving you in your life? What's the purpose of it? This is not an easy question to answer, truthfully, for most people. Because, of course, everyone initially is going to say, well, you know, I use communication when I need information, or I use communication to better explain myself or to clear up confusion, or to, create more intimacy with another, to experience bonding with another. And my question for you tonight is, how much of your communication is strictly about the need of the ego to be seen? One of the hardest aspects of the ego to overcome is its need to be seen. And even deeper than that is its need to be seen clearly. Linda just made a face. That was a good one. I take it you really struggled with that one. Yes? Yeah. Okay. So how many of you, since I brought that up and it garnered such a reaction, how many of you have had an instance where you've said something and another person took it through their own filters and took it in a way that you didn't mean it, and it immediately brought up the response in you where you felt obligated and even compelled to correct them? And of course, everybody has that experience. Everybody. And I'm going to ask you, where does that come from? It's not this benevolent little thing, right? Now, it's one thing, like, I have to be careful how I say everything. But in a business setting, right, let's say you say something and someone takes it the wrong way, and you do, you have to clarify because it's important to the job. This is not what I'm talking about, okay? I'm talking about you're just chatting with someone or you're saying to your kids such and such and then whatever, and then you hear them repeat it and the way they did it was not the way you meant it. And then you go in and assert yourself that, no, that's not what I said. Like, you didn't understand me. And where does that come from? Right? It's not a benevolent little thing. It isn't. So if you're going to hold on to that, it's time to really analyze it and drop it, because it's not what you think it is. The personal self, you know, the mind, cannot stand. It cannot stand to be seen in a manner that is outside of what it knows to be true about itself. Right? So, Tim, we'll take you as an example, because tonight you were talking about the fact that you always were very particular about making sure that you were smart, yeah? Or making sure that you at least appeared smart. So that's a good example. So if you have someone who's holding on to that, and then let's say they do something, perfect example would be, you know, they do something where they kind of mess it up. And then the other person catches it. Now, of course, that's going to trigger, you know, someone like Tim, that would trigger all of his stuff. So he immediately moves into a shameful place when he recognizes he just came across as stupid, right? We can't have that. So what's he going to do? He's not going to just, you know, most likely just kind of move forward. He's going to have to make them understand. Yeah. Make them understand why he did it. Make them see an aspect of it that they can't see that makes him look a little less stupid, right? But he's going to have to do something. And the point is that in the moment when you're not seen clearly, right, it triggers the ego and moves the ego into the spiral, because it creates confusion, doesn't it? And the moment if someone doesn't see you clearly, all of a sudden when you recognize that, you're confused. Why? Why didn't they understand that? What did I do wrong? What did I say wrong? And now it's running. The whole thing is running, and you're diving deeper, 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 deeper. So what it pulls up is the shame that's going to sit there about the fear that maybe you actually are the stupid person in this scenario or whatever it is. Okay. And of course, mind does not want to sit there. It's extremely uncomfortable. So it has to create something to swing itself out. And remember, there's always an action that's taken to create the swing. And in this scenario, it's him saying something to prove himself right or to show them his intention, whatever it was. It has nothing to do with the other person and everything to do with you just not wanting to look at the reality of what's sitting there, right? There's a need for the ego to maintain its facade, whatever that facade is that we've worked so hard to build. So in the world, I work very hard to appear successful. I work hard to appear kind and altruistic and what are the, you know, things that people would work hard to success? Did I say successful? I can't hear you, honey. Caring. That's a good one. That's a good one. So anytime that we recognize in another that they're not seeing us that way, we have to step up to correct them, because if we don't, then what are the repercussions of that? If we break it down and really analyze it, if you don't correct them, then what? Now you have someone walking around with that belief about you. And is that acceptable? Well, for the ego, of course that's not acceptable, because we work so hard to create it, we have to work extra hard to maintain it. Right? Now, the marker of a truly wise person is it doesn't matter. They know that for whatever reason, someone is going to, you know, everyone has their own filters. So whatever you say, you have no control over how another person is going to take it, period. The only thing you can do is to be crystal clear in your communication. But outside of that, you have no control over how it's perceived, because everyone is perceiving the world through their own filters based on the patterning, right? Some of these filters are the same universally, and some of them look a little bit differently because of the way the patterning and the imprinting is done. So, you know, the greater question is, so what if someone doesn't see you the way you see you? What does it matter? This is a constant discussion in my house with my children. We have kids who are in elementary school, and we all know how elementary school kids can be and how hurtful they can be, and it's all about how everyone's perceived, right? And so it's this ongoing dialogue in my house about, so what? What do you care about how someone sees you? You know who you are, yeah? You know the truth. If your intention was pure and you know that, what does it matter if anybody else knows it? Right? What does it matter if anybody else knows it? If anybody else can, you know, acknowledge that in you. You know it. The rest doesn't matter. Now, that's easy to say and not easy to walk, is it? Especially when it's someone you respect a lot who doesn't see you clearly, someone you hold above yourself. That's a really big challenge. I get that with my students all the time. It's one way I can trap my students almost every time with that one. PLN, why are you laughing? Do share.
Because it happens all the time where you say something and, you know, like, so if I was to say something and you come back and I'm like, but that's not what I meant. You know, or something like that. Or you're like, well, why can't she see that, you know, that's not what I meant or whatever. And then you have to go back and look at it and you're like, doesn't even matter. Like, got to go back and look at that one again.
Yeah. And it happens all the time. So like pretty recently, it seems like PLN had sent me communication and it was like a business thing, right? So she's our vice president. So she has a lot of jobs to do. So she communicated with me about something. I think I made a request of her. Yeah, it was concerning a mini intensive that we just did. And I made a request of her to put out communication. And so she got back to me and said that basically she had already covered all that except for one piece. Like, she'd already done it. And my question back to her was, what does it matter if you've done it or not? It has nothing to do with my request. Right? Whether she had done it or not, I didn't care. I wanted this thing to go out. Yeah. But she was compelled to have me know, you see, that she had done this already. Why? Well, because in that moment, she got triggered that she would look like a slacker, that she would look like she was inept. Right? Because any good vice president would have already done that. Yeah. Or whatever her story was in particular. But what she couldn't see was, and this is perfect, so what she couldn't see was that the communication was very clear. It was very clear. It was, I need you to send out this email, and these are the things that need to be in it. Yeah, I didn't say, in case you haven't done it already, I need you to send this out. It was just, I need you to send this out. And yet she came back from a place of questioning, right, because she felt I didn't see her. And then as soon as that came, she was completely in it, you see. Because if she had seen it without a filter, without the filter of the low self-worth that sat there, all she would have been like was like, okay, I'll get to it in an hour. Okay, I'll do it today. just okay. You see, there was nothing more needed. That was it. It was very simple. Very simple. But you see, her filters kept her from seeing what was right there. Yeah. And that's one of the principles that is always in action with the personal self. We call it the superimposition of the unreal upon the real. Okay. So for those of you who have listened to my show, that sounds so funny, who have listened to our sessions regularly, you may have heard me tell the story. I mean, most people know it anyway, but the story of the snake and the adept, right? Where the young adept comes across the cobra in the field and has a heart attack because he's terrified. And in reality, the cobra that scared him to death was a stick. But because of his filters and his fear of snakes and his projection that there could be a snake in the field, and then seeing something that looked snake-like, right? His filters kept him from experiencing reality. And reality was there was a stick in the field, in the grass. Yeah. And so he functioned from the place of his story. It had nothing to do with what was. And see, this is what everybody's doing all the time. You superimpose your own reality on top of what is. And the example with Pelion is perfect. The communication was as clear as it could have been, but she couldn't see it, right? Because of her story and because of the strength of that story. And it took someone from the outside who can see it to bring her back so that she could actually see it. She never would have seen it, you see, because the story would have kept running. But I had to bring her back to it to really look from a different place, you know, and then she could see it. So even with advanced students, this happens. This happens. Yeah. It's very, a very, very strong part of the program. The ego cannot handle not being seen clearly. And it is a true marker of humility to function in the space where you really don't care anymore how people see you. It's not a defiant thing, right? It's not, what's the word I use all the time? Brother. There's a certain thing that we all tend to do that covers pain. Oh, come on. Help.
Indifferent.
Indifference. Thank you. Perfect. Perfect. So it's not indifference to say from the space of truly not, it doesn't matter how people perceive you, right? Now, if you say, I don't care what anybody thinks about me, that is a flat out lie, right? I mean, you feel the energy in that. Feigning indifference does not make it true. Not at all. But you do come to a place where someone will perceive you incorrectly and you'll know what you said. And then your spouse basically says, oh, you never told me that. And you know for a fact you did, but you don't say anything. You allow them to think you never told them that. Right? Now the ego will like kick and scream inside in the beginning when you start doing that. It hates it. It hates it. But what you recognize, if you really look at it, is how you have this, there's this ego battle going on all the time where you constantly have to assert yourself over other people. You always have to show them that, you know, you're wrong. You're wrong. You're wrong. You're wrong. Right? Or others are doing the same to you, trying to prove you wrong because you didn't understand them. Right? And then having to assert that. Well, where's the love in any of that? It is non-existent. And what a shame. And these are the people we do it with the most, or the people that we care about the most. And it's really sad. Yeah, go ahead.
I have a question. So, now you use the example, like if you're at work and you have to make something clear to someone, but what if, like, if you're having a conversation with your spouse or something, right? And you're talking about something that really kind of needs to be hashed out or gone over or something, say finances or something. That's something that people tend to disagree on a lot. And you, and you know, if they don't see you clearly or as you want to be seen, do you just not continue the conversation? Like, you know, of course you're not going to go through with an indifferent attitude and just say, you know, screw it, I'm just going to keep talking anyway, it doesn't matter what you think of me or whatever. Like, how do you have that conversation with them where you get them to see, like, you know, this is what I'm presenting, and, you know, no, that's not what I'm saying. You know, like, how do you, I mean, mm-hmm. if it has to be talked about, you can't just say, mm-hmm. well, I guess it doesn't matter if they think that of me. You know what I mean?
Right, right. Yeah. And that's a little different. So it's a great question, because obviously I need to clarify. So thank you for that. The issue, okay, is not in someone just being confused about what you're saying. And so then you have to go back and clarify. And you can easily take ownership of that. Maybe I didn't speak that clearly enough. So let me, because that wasn't what I meant. So let me just say it in different words or whatever and ask me if it's still not clear. See, there's no issue there. There's no condemnation in that, right? It's just you owning the fact that maybe your words weren't clear enough, and that's fine, right? But the difference is when something is said, like let's say you said to your, you reminded your spouse, hey, Downton Abbey's on tonight at 9 o'clock, right? And your spouse is a huge Downton Abbey fan, and they had, you know, oh my gosh, it's on at 9 o'clock. Let's make sure we sit down together and watch it. Okay, well, let's do that. And so later on, let's say you just kind of forget or whatever, and it's 9:30, and then your spouse turns the TV on, and then they come across Downton Abbey, and they're like, oh my God, it was on. You didn't tell me, blah, blah. And then you are like, yes, I did. I told you. See, that's it. That's it. Why do you feel compelled to correct them, right? Because you can't stand what they're showing you, the anger or the disappointment or like whatever it is that they're disillusioned in you. You can't stand it, right? Whereas you could just say, oh, didn't I? Oh, I'm so sorry if I didn't. Who cares? You see? Does it really matter? You know the truth. Does it really matter? Is it worth starting a fight over? Oh, I must have forgotten. You see? Now, the ego will even just listen to this little piece of teaching and not like it at all. Oh, that's ridiculous. People need to know when they're wrong. People need to know when they've misunderstood something, or else they're going to continue to do it. Well, you know what? They're going to continue to do it anyway. I promise you that. Whether you're the one who's going to correct them today or not, they're still going to do it, because it's built in, right? You view something through your own filters, and you make assumptions that everybody else has the same filters, and everyone will understand what you're saying, the words that you use, the implications that are sitting under the words that you use, right? But someone else that you're communicating with is not going to have the same filters in place. They may have some of them, right? Especially if you're in the same family, you're raised the same way, right? But they won't have all of them. And there are always going to be things where there's going to be some miscommunication. People forget things, right? And then they can't own up to the fact that maybe they forgot. I didn't forget that. You never told me that. I wouldn't have forgotten that, right? I see that all the time with my son, right? I have a teenage son. Oh my God, heaven forbid he might admit that, oh, maybe I wasn't as clear as I could have been in the way I said that. Or maybe, you know, you did tell me and I forgot. It's just that very defiant, like, you never told me that, right? So it's equally being able to humble yourself to say, oh, maybe I did forget, right? Like, even though inside you're thinking, I don't think I, you know, did I do that? I don't think I did that. But who cares? You know, there's something that comes out of, you know, I think it came, well, who knows, but I think it came out of the Course in Miracles. But the reason I know the saying is because Dr. Phil used to say it all the time. I remember like in the 80s or 90s, whenever it was, I used to catch Dr. Phil every now and again on Oprah. And he would say, you know, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? And I was always like, that's so brilliant. You know, if your goal is to be at peace and to be happy, then being compelled to be right has no part in that, you see. Because if you always have to be right, I promise you, you're never going to be happy. Never. Because the only thing that's going to happen is the world is just going to come at you over and over and over again, putting you in the situation where you have to assert that you're right again. And that does not make you happy. Every time it comes up, you may feel a little bit justified in the doing of it, and you may feel a little bit of rush, yeah, a little endorphin rush when you could prove to someone that you're right. But what that comes out of is not a happy feeling. It's the exact opposite. So your need to be seen clearly is only going to perpetuate your pain and your suffering, you see. I can't hear you. I still can't hear you. What'd she say?
She said, what if it's with one person?
Meaning?
One particular person.
Just one person you have that issue with? Well, then there's still work to do. Yeah. Then that person's your greatest teacher. Your greatest gift. The one that, yeah, you know, and everybody has one. You know, the one person that if there was ever anybody who's here to test you, it's that one person. Yeah, everybody's got that one. Everyone. And thank God for them, you know. Remember, a lot of times, like, your mortal enemies in this lifetime will be those that you actually love the most. You just don't remember. Yeah. They came here to show you the things that you needed to see for your liberation. I mean, what greater gift could you give? Oh, that's not nice. I don't want to sit in that. Then I'm going to have to look at them differently. And who wants to do that? Let me hate them. Please. I'll feel better if I hate them. The mind is so twisted. It cracks me up. It just cracks me up. Completely warped, the whole thing. It's completely irrational. Completely irrational. And yet it's where everybody functions from. And we take it for granted day by day that, you know, that's real. And that's the way things should be. What? Did you want to say something? No? Okay. All right. So communication. So be very careful, especially in written communication, that you do it from an objective place and not the subjective place of the ego. In written communication, especially in texting, oh my word, texting is just this minefield of miscommunication. You have, you know, 100 characters, and you're supposed to figure out where the other person's really coming from. Very difficult to do in texting, really difficult. I mean, it's hard. I mean, people can't do it when they're face-to-face with someone. How are they going to do it if you can't even see them and see their face and their expression and read their body language and all of that, right? So you have to really begin. I mean, if you're serious about your evolution, right, then you have to really begin to start monitoring yourself and where your communication's coming from, you know? I mean, and this is part of the work. This is not some, you know, miscellaneous trite thing that I pulled up to talk about tonight. This is a serious part of the work. When you get serious about being clear, right, then the days of someone sending you an email and you just shooting another one off, you know, without going back and rereading it and editing it, those days are over. And I tell my students all the time that when I have email correspondence with, especially with them, right, with my students, I mean, sometimes it can be just a very simple, say, like a 6-line email that I'm going to send back. And it may take me 30 minutes to write it and get it out, actually send it, which I'm sure to people seems ridiculous. But it's written, and then I go back and I look at every single word just to make sure that I covered everything. See, what I do is you put yourself in the space of the other person, right? I anticipate the filters who are going to be reading it. So that when they get... Well, okay. No, she's laughing. What?
Because I'm thinking about how I'll send you a book and I'll get 5 words back.
What's your expectation there, Pelion?
That's hilarious. Oh, there's so much that just went right through there.
And the bottom line is there's just nothing else needed, you know. It can all be said in 5 words. Right? And it's true. It's true. I mean, the ego is the thing that wants to fluff everything up and embellish everything and all that, but that's not what spirit is all about. It's just spirit just cuts right to the chase. There's really no reason not to. So in that way of functioning, you know, and here's an example. Like, so I have a person that I do have to communicate with on occasion, and it has to do with me going and spending time out of town. All right, we'll just leave it at that. Well, my recognition of him is like his filters are really particular. And he's someone that, like, you have to be extremely careful in how you communicate with him, because he will, because of the patterning, he will read into any communication looking for the thing that will trigger him. I mean, really, really. It can be the most, you'd think you were sending just the most kind of straightforward and loving thing, and he'd find a reason to turn it into something that it truly isn't, right? Now, in the world, of course, what he gets is exactly that, because the filters are so strong that he will find what he's looking for in, like, everyone's communication with him. So even for as clear as I can be, it'll still come, right? I just don't engage with it, and that's fine. But this is what you have to, you know, at least with him, it's minimal, right, when he communicates with me, because I am so careful about I project out how he's going to view what I'm saying, right? So you'll have to go back in and tweak this and tweak that to make the damage as minimal as possible on his end, right? And that's for his benefit, right? Why can we not? And I think, Tim, I was saying this to this week, you know, why can we not be the person who proves to someone that there is another option in the world, right? Not everyone does this. You know, if your story is everybody does this to me, and then you have an opportunity in communication to basically do the same thing. So what they do is they will set themselves up. So we'll take a person who has low self-worth, right? And I'll use me as example, of course, have to. So I had an experience back a good while ago with a woman who has very low self-worth and is always compelled to do whatever she can to, like, prop herself up and show people how special she is. We'll just use those words. And for some reason, she felt I wasn't doing that for her. So I got a communication basically saying, I want acknowledgement, right? Now, from a personal place, you could look at it and be triggered by it. Like, what are you talking about? You're so full of yourself, aren't you? Right? You think you're the one responsible for the work that I do or whatever, right? You see, you can see how the story can go. Yeah. But what really was going on is you've got a person here who, because of the low self-worth, is scrambling, right, to prove that it's unjustified, because that's what sits there. I don't like myself, right? Or I don't make an impact. And then even though on the outside, the world sees them as someone who's very, seems very put together and very whatever, well, that's just a facade. So they will assert this thing like, well, you need to acknowledge me. That's not because they feel good about who they are. It's the exact opposite. It's because they're terrified about who they are or who they think they are, really. And so I was telling the story to Tim this week, and I said, you know, so I really spent time with it and was very careful in how I responded back. And I gave it to her. And he was like, huh? Why? And I was like, well, why not? She wanted acknowledgement? Okay. Here you go. You can have it. You know, and this is a person that I'm going to continue to acknowledge probably until my dying day. Whenever it comes up around this particular area of my life, she will always come up. And I will always give her credit. Why? Because she's part of my story, right? But why not? If that's what she wanted, right? Can I not be the one who shows her? Because what would she get? What would she normally get from anybody else? She'd get pushback, yeah? The fact is, like, if you have this, in this particular example, the person was wanting credit for something that really wasn't accurate, okay? There was a piece of it that was accurate, but it was kind of blown out of proportion, okay? Well, if you bring that to the normal person and they know it's blown out of proportion, what are they going to do? They're going to basically give that back to you. You know, no, because that's not true. You're making more out of it than it was. Right? Again, needing to be seen clearly. So instead, I was just like, okay, you want it? You got it. How many people you want me to tell? You know, that's okay. And so Tim was like, well, why? Well, why not? What do I care? What does it matter? Does it make me less of a whatever I am? Because I'm going to give credit someplace else? No, I know who I am. Does it matter that the story on her end was, you know, her own superimposition of the real upon the real? Does that matter? No, I still know the truth. That'll stay here in my core, right? People can think whatever they want to think. What do I care? What do I care? Right now, and that's not from that place of indifference. I mean, it's truly like, what do I care? Why would I need to care? And if what she's used to getting is pushback, well, what did I just show her? I just showed her that there's something else. I showed her compassion. Yeah. Compassion. How? She's only capable of seeing what she's capable of seeing, you see. And all of you listening, you have people in your life that are the same way, and you get so frustrated with them because they can't see the world clearly. They're stuck in their ways. They're stuck in a mindset. You see things from a broader perspective. Of course you do. You listen to BBS, right? It's the truth. But rather than holding yourself above them because you have a broader scope, humble yourself and recognize that if you were in their shoes and if you were raised with the imprinting and the patterning in place that they have, you would view the world the same exact way that they do. And so who are you to judge them? You see, you are a product of your patterning. Period. And at some point in your evolution, you've done enough work to get you to a place where you can actually view the world from a broader place. And that's beautiful. And you need to give yourself the credit for walking that walk so you got to that place. Well, at some point, that other person's going to get there too. It just isn't now. right? But it doesn't make them less than you because they're not there yet. And it doesn't make you better than them because you got there first. So stop doing the whole asserting yourself so everybody sees who you are and recognizes you for the things you want to be recognized for. You know, humble yourself and show people compassion. That's where the strength is. You assert yourself all day long. There's no strength in that. You know, it's a joke. The point is to free the mind, right? Because it's the mind that has you trapped here in this reality. And the mind is distorted. So all of these things that you do on a daily basis that you are completely entrenched in, and it's habitual and it's comfortable, you have to begin questioning every single bit of it. Why do I do that? Why did I feel like I needed to do that? You know, the work begins with one of the last things to fall away, which is the question. If it isn't, you know, the questioner literally is like the last piece to fall away in dissolution, but it's a huge, helpful, beautiful piece along the way. Because it's the questions, when taken from a place of contemplation, that will bring you deeper into your own consciousness, and that will begin to really expand that consciousness and bring you into a place where that personal self gets smaller and the objective observer gets stronger and is more capable of holding more power and staying in the objective when everything in the world around it is pushing at it and wanting it to be personal, wanting to attach from a place of self-righteousness and anger and judgment. You're being called to walk from a different place. It is not business as usual for anybody who listens to me. Whether that be for 5 minutes or every week for 5 months or for 5 years, it doesn't matter. If you've come across the program, it means it's time for you to start looking. It's time for you to start asking the questions. And it's scary because it will challenge everything you ever thought you knew about yourself. But the only way you're walking off is to ask the questions and to be fearless enough to be honest about the answers. That's where the objective observer is such an aid in the work, because when you reach a point where the observer is stronger than the personal self, there's no fear anymore about looking at whatever it is that comes up that needs to be looked at. The fear comes because the personal self doesn't want to see certain things, right? That's why it's all locked in the unconscious. It just doesn't want to see it. It's too painful. And in the beginning of the work, some of the work is extremely challenging because you're being forced to look, and it hurts, right? But after a certain point, the observer is so strong that it's looking for the things that hurt because it knows they need to come up. And there's no fear anymore about seeing it, you know, and allowing it to be personal, because the observer can do that too. It can drop a certain aspect of it so that it can feel personal, because that's what has to happen in order to clear it. If you're listening to me, you're capable of doing this work, or you wouldn't even, you know, I would not be in your awareness, we'll put it that way, right? Teachers are like that. It's like, it doesn't matter what level you teach at. It doesn't matter. It's all the same. Whatever level you teach at, those who are ready for your teaching, you know, you come into their awareness somehow or other. We don't have to go looking for people. They find us. That's the point. They find us.
you know, we've got people on through the BBS thing who are really regular listeners and very engaged. And there's no other way I would have reached them, you know. Just had this little program on the internet radio, and it, for whatever reason, they came across it, and then boom, there you go. So I'm speaking to all of you who can hear me, whether that's tonight on this particular date or whether it's later in an archive. It doesn't matter. Time is an illusion anyway. It's all the same. If you hear me, you're ready. You know, I'm not telling you that this is the lifetime you're going to walk off that life-death cycle, but you're ready for deeper work. I promise you that. And at some level, you're ready for the deepest work. So communication. Take some time this week. Really monitor yourself. See how much of your communication is just about you having to have people understand who you are and what you're all about and all of these identifiers that you're hanging on to. And maybe spend some more time just being quiet, just observing. Yeah. If you never take time, you know, the thing I love is when you look at writing, you know, the meaning is actually found in the spaces. Because if there were no spaces, it wouldn't mean anything. Yeah. So it's the same with you as far as experiencing, you know, the voice of God within. It's in the silence. And if you're so busy running around all the time, filling the silence with your own voice, there's no room for the voice of God. So contemplate that for this week. We good now? Yeah. Okay. So I have a lovely little song for you for meditation tonight. It's not a normal meditation song, but it's fantastic. And I'll leave you with that. Please visit us on theshambhalacenter.org. And again, your donations are always so appreciated. You all have a beautiful week. God bless. Love you. Good night.
Sold I to the merchant ships. Minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit. But my hand was made strong.